Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Allen. On this beautiful day here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, environmentally, it's a nice day. Otherwise, we're right in a state of emergency, Don. We have a number of things, but I have made a commitment right at the top of this program to make the announcement of the funeral, unfortunately, regrettably, tragically, taking place at 11 a.m. Here in our beloved city, of a six-year-old African-American baby that tragically died, was burned up in a kind of a freak accident. Mexican national and his wife, who obviously had been in the country illegally, but who were traveling around. He was cooking some food on, a hot plate. It caught fire. The car ignited. The six-year-old child and her nine-year-old sister were in the car. Their mother, for whatever reason, left them in the automobile. The fire quickly reached their vehicle, which was, sitting right next to them. The children were trapped. It was a series of explosions that took place. The nine-year-old, by the way, came out of her coma. She was in a coma for, 5 to 6 days, if you will. She came out of her coma a couple of days ago. Looks like she will survive. Of course, she has burns and et cetera. The six-year-old, Tyria White, is the young child's name. Tyria White, 6 years of age, African-American child. Tragically taken from this life behind, what is a part of, America, poverty and everything else, if you will. But the service will be at Calvary Lutheran Church in North Minneapolis, 4656 Colfax Avenue North, if you will. There are some folks who are talking in terms of at least having people attend the service so that this child leaves this life with a, her spirit having the feeling that people cared. Because leadership and the media, the media family had a piece yesterday that the nine-year-old, her sister, had come out of the coma. The six-year-old was terribly, horribly burnt, and of course the casket will not be opened. In fact, they will then finish the cremation. But again, a Reverend Kemp, I don't really know him, Don, doesn't really seem to have a church. The white ministry allows him to do a thing periodically at the church at 4656 Colfax Avenue North in Minneapolis, if you will, but it's only appropriate that those of us in a position to notify and provide information that we do that, and that's what we're doing here on the Don and Ron program. Again, that service starts at 11 a.m., daylight central time, if you will. Again, Tyrese White, 6 years old. And the Mexican national, by the way, is charged with second-degree murder, and will be sentenced and will then be deported upon the completion of his sentence, according to the authorities. He will be deported back to Mexico, if you will. So we wanted to put that information out, and we were asked by Mrs. Brooks of the Brooks Funeral Home, one of only two funeral homes, African-American funeral homes here in our beloved state of Minnesota. only two undertakers of color, if you will. But we were asked if we would do that, as they certainly want to at least have a presence of, you know, individuals as this child's, you know, journey, quote unquote, begins. Again, that address is 4656 Colfax Avenue North in the city of Minneapolis. It is at a church called Calvary, which is a Caucasian church. But Reverend Kemp, as I understand it, will be doing the services. So it is a continued sad day, and we have a five-year-old baby, and I think our caller is going to be talking about that as well, as he was with a family last night, if I'm not mistaken, in which there was violent activity. I don't know the status of the son, who was apparently shot by his father as part of the domestic, but K.G. Wilson will understand Don, you vetted him, and will be giving us that information. So turn it over to you so we can bring K.G. Wilson in, and he can enlighten us, bring us up to speed on what is happening. All right. Go ahead, Don. You there, Don?
I am here, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, okay, man. I was getting people to call in
rather than text me on the phone, and I apologize for being away from the switchboard. But I would like to say, before we bring K.G. Wilson on, I'd like to thank everyone who contributed to our fundraiser for the Ron and Don Show for the year of 2020, especially Mr. David Schultz, owner of Underground Music Cafe in St. Paul. And it's a great place. He's invited us, Mr. Edwards, to broadcast live from his Underground Music Cafe. So maybe one day in one day in the future, we will be doing that. And we thank everybody that donated to the 2020 Ron and Don Show so we can stay on Blog Talk Radio another year. Greatly appreciate it. And especially to Dr. David Schultz, owner of the Underground Music Cafe here in St. Paul. Now, without further ado, I've been scanning the newspapers and the television stations online and offline, and haven't heard anything about all these murders. And then I turned to this gentleman's page, Mr. K.G. Wilson, and, you know, he's leaving a crime scene. Someone just got shot, and he's there and doing a lot of stuff that's necessary in our community. I'd like to welcome to the show this morning Mr. K.G. Wilson. Hey, K.G., how you doing, sir?
I'm blessed. Tired, but blessed.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
I'm very interested in getting an update on a number of items, but last night I saw your video where you had to pull over your car because you were really grieving because of the scene that you had just left. And if you would, why don't you go ahead and explain to our listeners what happened and the part you played in this?
Well, actually, what happened was, from the beginning, I was about to speak at a meeting with some young people that I do every Friday, people who are battling with heroin addiction, opium addiction, stuff like that. And so my phone rang, and I went to check my phone, and it was a call that father had shot his son. And so I had to let them know that I had to leave because I had to go be there. And so I left that meeting, and I went over to 34th and Queen. When I got there, the officers had it taped off. The crime lab had it taped off, so I had to stand on 35th, the corner of 35th and Queen. And so when I got there, witnesses and police at the scene let me know that This was a family altercation in that father had shot his son, and the son had been rushed to the hospital. So while I was there, I saw this young man who was shot, the son's sister, and she was like crying and kind of running around erratically, and it was just a really sad scene. And me, I always try to stay professional in the presence of the families and strong for them. And it was really hard for me just to see this. And a few seconds later, a brother appeared. And so the brother and the sister were standing near about on the end of the block on the 3500 block of Queen. So Julian Learsome showed up on the scene, and while I was doing the video, called me over. And so after I finished doing the video, I went over, and she asked me, could I go over and talk with them and kind of console them, because they were grieving pretty strongly. And the sister
was... Let me ask you a couple questions to bring our audience fully up to speed, Mr. Wilson. Now, Learsome, now she's a police officer, or what is her role?
No, I forgot exactly what she does, but she works with one of the organizations in the community. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly what it is, but but she did show up, and so like I said, I went over and started to console these two family members, which was a brother and a sister, and the brother was a little bit more stronger than the sister, which is common. And so the sister was just really pouring in tears. And so Miss Learsome came over and hugged her and held her for a while. And so then, you know, down the street where the house where it happened at, actually, which was outside in front of the house where they lived, another sister was holding her baby. This was another third child. And she was just really, this is the one that really broke my heart the most, just really screaming and hollering and just really in so much pain. And so, like I said, still trying to remain professional, which was hard for me yesterday in the presence of them. My insides was just torn apart. And both of you know I've been doing this 16 years. I think this was one of the most intense times and emotional times for me to witness what I saw. And so they took the father away in the police car to jail. And I think that's really when this family of children really were upset. And I could just hear them just questioning why did this happen? Why did this happen? And just tears just pouring on this front porch. And so, like I said, I stayed there with them for maybe an hour or more, and until they decided to go in and just family grieve together and deal with the tragedy that happened yesterday. And so what you saw was when I left and got in the car, I was able to actually let go and let the tears fall from my eyes, because I felt so crushed by what had happened. And as you know, I had been dealing with a lot of the other shootings and things that was going on in the community. So yesterday was just something that I wouldn't want anybody to experience.
If I could, just a couple of questions, Mr. Wilson, myself, just kind of trying to get the scenario and protocol in place. Now, we have this Learsome, who you're not sure what her specific responsibility or authority is, if you will. And you say, by the way, the police let you back in the house? You went back in the house with the members of the family?
No.
Is that correct?
No. Oh. I didn't go in the house. The family went back in the house. I was standing in front of the house.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, because it happened right in front of the house. It was right out in front of the house.
The shooting, you mean?
The shooting happened right out in front of the house.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now you have this Pearson. Now, I would assume, though, with all the money that is being awarded and et cetera for these groups that are out there. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, you have an organization now called, Love or something like that. Could you give us the name of what your organization is?
Oh, that I'm the spokesman for United in Peace, Inc.
Oh, United in Peace, Inc. Okay, all right.
Yeah,
now,
I'm the spokesman for United in Peace.
There's been a number of groups. Let me see. You have VJ
Works
Smith,
with.
Mad Dads. You have My Mother's Love. Is Miss Lisa Clemens. You have that organization.
Yeah.
But officially, the city has set aside a tremendous amount of money, and it's being coordinated through the newly created in January, Office of Violence, if you will, directed toward ending violence. That is a Miss Sasha Cotton, if I'm not mistaken. She's the head of that. It used to be known as GVI. Gang Violence Initiative, and they changed it to Group Violence Initiative. And then, as you know, the mayor indicated he was creating the Office of Violent Prevention, if you will, under Ms. Sasha Cotton. So I'm trying to get a feel what other of these entities, including the navigators. You know, we now have navigators. We call them navigators, who are official members of the police department's operational conglomeration, if you will. So were all of those organizations in play last night during this tragic situation?
Not while I was there. So I don't know if they came after I left, but I didn't see them there last night.
Oh, and what time of
so
evening was this? What time of evening, to the best you remember, the recollection?
It had to be, let's see. It had to be, our meeting is that had to be around, I was there around 7:30,
8. Oh, so you had a good view because that's still daylight time. So you had a chance to see who all the movers and shakers were. Okay, well, maybe we'll get someone. We'll call in from one of those many organizations.
I'm quite sure you will.
The condition of the young man, is he still with us, or is he deceased, or what has happened there? Do you know?
I just got up, and I'm up. I was trying to rest, but I got up especially for to talk to you guys today. On the show, I probably would have still been resting because I'm really, really tired. But I haven't got up and went over there. I plan to get up and go over there to the house to visit with the family and to check on them and see how they're doing and how the young man's doing. So I haven't actually been over there yet.
All right. If we could, I'm going to take the liberty to continue to move us along. How is the 5-year-old baby that was shot in the foot? We saw the mother and the children pulling away from the home there on the, what is it, Mr. Wilson, the 2100 block on 4th Street, right? Is that where it's at?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, what is the condition of, because I understand an individual has been apprehended, a gunman was apprehended a couple of days ago. And so, but how's the baby? How is she doing? I saw some of the pictures that you took of the bedroom and the floor and the blood, unfortunately, and et cetera. So, how is the 5-year-old doing? How is she doing?
Oh, she's doing fine. She's doing fine. I mean, this little kid is a soldier. She's strong. Her spirits are high. And like I said, the gunman that shot her and broke the bones in her feet did not break her spirit. He broke some bones in her feet, but did not break this little girl's spirit. And so if you was to see her and meet her, you would not even know that she had been shot. She's a great big smile. And she also the other day, cause I do my, Love Outreach, which is where I go out. I'm doing that today and pass out sandwiches and water to the homeless. She actually sat down with me afterwards, the shooting, and made up some sandwiches with me to pass out to the homeless.
Very
so,
good.
Yeah, she's right. She's doing really good, man. Really, really good. So, you know,
yeah,
these people.
I've seen her in the interview. Yes.
Yeah.
Particularly by
yeah, she's,
okay.
Yeah, she's doing good. She's doing good.
All right.
So I'll be calling to check on them today.
Yes, okay. Mr. Allen, I'll turn it back to you. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to dig in just for a minute here because I know you're tired, KG, because I've been watching that
I'm
page.
Woke now, though. I
got
to get up, man. I got to get out here. I'm doing the outreach today. I'm making about 200 sandwiches in today to pass out to the homeless.
That's good. And Mr. Edwards and I are going to speak a little bit later on the news blackout for the black community, why we are not getting this information while people have been shot every day in the last couple of weeks here. But more importantly, I read a post by the leader of the gang violence or crime prevention in the city of Minneapolis, Sasha Cotton. It said the GBI Project Community Life Community Group will be hosting a Stop the Violence pop-up community event in the 4th Ward, North Minneapolis, tonight at 6 p.m. Leave your name and comments if you want the specific location. Free food, fun, and engagement to keep the peace. And I asked you, you know, would you explain that to me? Did you know anything about this, Mr. Wilson?
No, I didn't. I didn't hear about it until you told me.
Yeah,
yep,
and
until you
I
said,
find that
said that. I...
Because,
huh?
You know, you're talking about violence, and then I'm looking at her business card here. It says Director Office of Violence Prevention. Then it goes down to the Minneapolis Health Department.
Oxymoron.
And so I'm looking at that, and I'm not connecting the two at all whatsoever. And I'm a little bit set back on why the top secret G19 classified, as Chris Tucker would say in Rush Hour, why the covert secretness? Because if this is a gang violence or a violence prevention type event, shouldn't the whole community know? And what about the people that don't have internet and don't have Facebook? How will they know? I mean, what are your thoughts about that, Mr. Wilson?
You know, like I said, that was the first I had heard of it when you said it. I don't know why I didn't get a call or an invite about it or nothing like that. That kind of thing doesn't bother me. But I think it's the only thing that may bother me is that I think other people should know about it. There's different groups that do different things in the city. And I'm one of the people who understands that everybody don't do the same thing. We should do things together. Everybody don't do everything together, but I'm just glad that somebody, does something. I just believe for me, Don and Ron, that I believe that I was rescued and sent here alone to do what I do. If nobody else wants to go, I'm going. And so that's my mission. And it seems like for these 16 years, I have been on a mission alone, and I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that. If I can work with somebody and I can join with some group and help them out, I'm willing to do that. But other than that, you know, me, most of the time you will see me by myself. And so I don't get upset behind none of these things. I just, you know, I just want to see unity, and I want to see it in my lifetime. I like to see change and peace in my lifetime. And if I don't get to see it, I want to be a part of the history of that I'm remembered as somebody who came here and I gave my all. I never asked for a penny from anyone. It wasn't about that for me. It was about trying to save some lives while I'm here. And so that's my piece on that, man.
And so you
okay.
Have no affiliation, Mr. Wilson, with any nonprofit or government agency?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
And
you guys would
ask,
be the first ones to know about it if I did.
So how are you existing, if I can ask? A donation?
Yes, I guess sometimes I may. Usually, when I get a donation, it's for like what I'm doing today. Like I ask for donations for water and and sandwiches so I can feed the community. You know, I do security jobs around the city. You know, I speak and sometimes may get a stipend or something like that. Doing this, the school year, I do groups and stuff like that. But other than that, my work in the community, no, there's no funding or anything for that.
No funding. Okay. Another question, so that Mr. Allen and I can familiarize our worldwide audience with regards to, you know, how things work here in the Twin Cities, because you have equal violence in St. Paul, and some have said that you are thinking in terms of moving your ministry or opening a new ministry in the city of St. Paul, if you will, because of the problems over there, particularly now, well, on both the east side, the Rondo area, and the so-called north end. And so it demands, quote-unquote, a examination of what the heck is happening to all the money, because the organization, and Mr. Allen and I will talk in more detail when we completed our discussion with you, because the Office of Violence, if you will, or ending violence or whatever, under Ms. Sasha Cotton, was the immediate recipient of $1.1 million. Also, I had made a note to ask you the question, have you been asked, Mr. Wilson, to join the special committee formed by the mayor, not to be confused with the one formed by Commissioner of Public Safety John Harrington, but the one that has both the chief and the number two person in the Minneapolis Foundation, Smith Baker. Were you asked to sit on that committee? Because it seemed to be a real elite selection process. Were you invited, given your long history, you say, 16 years of activity here on the streets of Minneapolis? Were you asked to join that committee?
I never even heard of the committee you just said.
Is that right?
Never heard of it.
Wow.
Till you just told me just now, never heard of it.
Uh-huh. Mayor's Task Force on Ending Violence, I see, which is...
Yeah, I know nothing about it.
Nothing about it. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Allen. You want to finish it up?
Yeah, KG, I'd like to thank you for calling in this morning. And as usual, you can call in and set it up the day before, anytime you have something hot that you want to go and talk about. And appreciate it. And good luck. Any last words before we let you go?
Yeah, just keep the young man who was shot by his father, the family, in your prayers, anybody who's listening out there, and keep little five-year-old Jada Holmes in your prayers. She continues to heal, and keep her family in your prayer. And just, you know, if anybody's listening from out of town, our city is going through some violence right now, some things. People are grieving. Just keep the whole city in your prayers, and keep me in your prayers that I can stay healthy and strong enough to be out here and to be here for these families. Hopefully I don't have to console any more shooting victims' family, but, you know, retaliation is in the air and violence is still in the air, and so there's a chance that you may hear or see me at one of these future crime scenes. So thank you, Ron and Don, for being who you are. Keeping the truth, getting it out there, man. And God bless you, brothers, man.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay. All right. Let's do this. Don, do we have anyone holding that maybe had some observations or wanted to ask a question? We are on this one, and because of the experience that Mr. Wilson went through yesterday, we're not interested in having some kind of back and forth with people questioning him. Do we have any callers holding, Don, at this point?
No, we don't, but our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And the lines are wide open. And we're also broadcasting live, Mr. Edwards, on via Facebook Live, so that you can listen to the audio and see the dinosaur in the background.
Right. And by the way, we are going for an hour and a half today, which means that we will be on until 11 a.m. Central Standard Time here from our studios in the Twin Cities. Let me now go back, Don, because I'm puzzled by what the coordination is or is not. It has to be one of the two. Mr. Wilson seemed to have no knowledge whatsoever of the Office of Crime Prevention. Is that the appropriate name now? They kind of changed the name there. And I was
the
a
Office
little
of
startled
Violence.
By it. Go ahead.
The Office of Violence Prevention.
Yes. And what it did, because one of the things that you mentioned I caught, and I think you talked about it in the production meeting, is that when you reached out as a journalist, I mean, I'm quite sure they wouldn't have done that to a white journalist, when you reached out to the organization and its leader, Ms. Cotton, you were told that you would have to fax a specific number, and then that would determine if you were eligible to attend the event that they had. Is that the way that worked? How did that work?
Well, what it was, Mr. Edwards, you know, Minnesota has an open meeting law. And I don't know if this applies. Like, it probably does because it's a municipal agency. But what it was a social media post, which I'm not going to give a lot of credence to, that asked people if they were interested in this gathering to prevent violence to like or leave a comment on her, Ms. Cotton's Facebook page. And let me just, because I want to make this very clear for listeners. Here. So I'm just going to the page here so we know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, so you're looking at, I'm going to give you some numbers here. You have a person that's the head of the Violence Prevention Office who puts a post out that says that, hey, we're going to do this event to stop the violence, which is cool. But if you want to go or want to know the location, you're going to have to leave a comment down here. Okay? This particular person has 1,600 friends on social media, on Facebook. So you have 1,600 potential people that might engage her and show up. Maybe. It usually never happens like that. In comparison with our listener page, Our Black News, the Ron and Don Show, and my page, there's over 8,000 people combined in those pages. So you're talking to, you know, almost a little bit under 1% of this social media cluster, and you're talking to nobody, basically, but your friends in North Minneapolis. So how does the general public, I guess my question turns into, and I only ask questions that I can't answer, is how does the city of Minneapolis justify any office in any department putting up a Facebook post with such a poor following to engage the community?
Well,
the community is not engaged. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Well, I think that the two councilmen, Ellison and Cunningham, who represent that entire part of North Minneapolis, if you will, the 5th and the 4th Ward, I think they'll have to answer that question. There's, you know, they have meetings every Wednesday, public safety, and that's normally where the chief is summoned to be attacked, if you will. You know, that's been happening quite frequently. The council examines what solutions are in place, what's going on, and et cetera. So I think that, you know, certainly our council members and the office of the mayor. In fact, the mayor has a new African American in his office, if you will. And so apparently he's trying to, you know, brighten the colors of his organization. Then we have our the powerful office that received $1.1 million. Now, the reason I'm kind of asking this and having a somewhat of a problem, and maybe there's someone that could call in and again, help Don and Ron, is that an individual who is a member of the newly formed the mayor's task force chaired by Chief Arredondo and by Shonda Smith-Baker, chaired by them, not to be confused with the governor's powerful similar committee chaired by John Harrington, if you will, but both Shonda and Chief Arredondo are also a member of that committee. Now, an individual with the mayor's committee, as they told it to yours truly, had raised some questions about the violence, particularly in North Minneapolis. And this individual is a member of the mayor's group, if you will, and has a track record in history of being involved in North Minneapolis. Now, they maintain in the conversation with yours truly that they called to find out information after it was a series of shootings, including a couple of homicides, wounds, injuries, and they were texted back. And, of course, we welcome them because we're not trying to hide anything. If they just decide that they want to have anonymity, if you will, or to be anonymous, and et cetera, then that is their prerogative, and we understand. But in texting Ms. Cotton, the powerful director of the Office of Violence or Stopping Violence or whatever, was asked about the violence and, you know, the gang, and they were told, and maybe we can get clarification from Representative maybe Jan White, who is a woman of color, as I understand it, in the mayor's office, or maybe one of the city council power brokers, the 4th and 5th Ward. But this person, member of the mayor's just selected, chaired by Ms. Smith-Baker and Chief Arredondo, how they could get some information. They were also trying to get information from the new commander of the 4th Precinct, which he indicated they're not necessarily happy with that response. But in the case of Ms. Cotton, Ms. Cotton told her that that they were not involved with other acts of violence. They were only involved with gang violence. And I'm puzzled by that. And the individual who's already identified as a female, we'll go another step, African American, was basically told that no information could be provided and that they needed to call, you know, the precinct or the mayor's office or something like that, that they were not responsible for responding to any inquiry about anything other than gang violence. Now, you talk about this activity that was that last night or was that to be tonight that Ms. Cotton and her organization announced?
That was last night. It was last night, Mr. Edwards.
All right. So now that means that we have a lot of meetings, man. There's been a lot of meetings here over the last period of time, if you will. In fact, I think we've already had 3 meetings this past week of, you know, organizations, movers and shakers, being to talk about the violence, how to deal with the violence, resolve the violence, and et cetera, et cetera. I'm just kind of wondering, do we have a timeline? But I was shocked when I was told by a member of the mayor's task force that this city employee had said that they were not involved and had no interest in violence unless it was gang violence. That's what they were created for. I went back and took a look at the resolution by the mayor, and that's not what the mayor's resolution said. But go ahead, Doc. You have a question?
I just want to say, when they're talking, we're going to go to the phone lines here in a minute, but when they tell you that all they're concerned is with gang violence, yeah, there's a lot of drive-by shootings going on, people getting shot every day in the last couple of weeks, or shot every day in the last couple of weeks. But there's no information on where these gangs are, who they are. Are they from Minnesota originally? No. Are they in school? What is their age range? What is their affiliations? And how to disrupt that flow of wanting to be seen in North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis.
But I have to interrupt, because we allegedly had that in place. We talked about this particular group that I'm getting ready to identify over a year ago, called Recast. That's Joey Marsh Stevenson, who is now doing a lot of traveling, talking in terms of the great things that they're doing here in Minneapolis. Recast, the organization Recast, they have a couple million dollars, if you will. At one time, Joey Marsh Stevenson, another woman named Nicole, who is now the diversity director for the state of Minnesota, whatever that means, and Sasha Cotton, I mean, I was in a meeting with them in the summer of 2018 where they were talking in terms of the wonderful things that they were doing, the monies that they were making available, et cetera. Now, this was 2018. At that same time, a big delegation went out to New York City. Again, this is July. In fact, it was the week of July 4th, 2018. To meet with representatives from John Jay Law College out there in New York City. People were talking in terms of what they were doing. Some of the individuals who are on the operational board of Cotton's organization and et cetera are identified as gang leaders, if you will, individuals that can control things and et cetera. In fact, I have to say this, they're not really supposed to, but I have to say this, that in 2018, in the summer of 2018, Mr. Allen, there was a conference, Safe Streets, as it's called, nationwide, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in which a gang overlord from here was, they were, relaxing at they, talking. And this individual, who is the head of powerful gangs in the so-called 30s and 40s blocks, that's, as they identified, was talking after a couple of drinks, was, talking to the white police officers who were a part of the Minneapolis delegation to Grand Rapids, Michigan, in the summer of 2018. And they were talking in terms of things they were doing, how they were controlling things, how they were on top of everything that was happening, and how they were bringing order to the streets. And then upon their return, there was a meeting of the same group and some additional people at a very nice hotel in Chanhassen, Minnesota, which is, just south of us. Now, I've been told that, we should not talk about this, kind of information, and that we're being toxic when we talk about it. But when we hear testimony such as what we heard from Mr. Wilson as an example, we have to. We can't play stupid.
Yay!
And so we have to ask some questions about, what is going on. When there's been an evaluation of the performance, the effectiveness or the non-effectiveness of these groups, I mean, we just had, this new Office of Crime the Violence Initiative just funded by our beloved mayor, if you will, who's in some trouble himself behind his lack of support for the Muslim congresswoman. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. But I'm confused. And of course, I can't speak for you, Don. But I'm not in the inner circle, et cetera. But I have to go with what I see, what I hear, politicians and others attest to as how well things are under control here in Minneapolis. So I'm not sure what the heck is going on. But I know that at some point someone needs to be accountable for all the money.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, Mr. Edwards, 100% on that. Let's go to the phone lines. We have a caller from the Midwest, 1914. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. What's your name and what's your question, sir?
Oh, my name's Steve, and I have just a few quick questions, if I could.
Right here, Steve.
Well, I just real quickly about Sasha Cotton. You brought something just up just a minute ago. Is she, from what I understand, she's been in office since 2014, is this correct, or about the last 5 years?
Obviously, you've been researching. Yeah, she initially was employed directly by the City of Minneapolis Health Department, allegedly looking at issues like mental health and et cetera. In fact, again, I was in a meeting in January of 2016 when the formal name of the Gang Violence Initiative, GVI, was introduced in a meeting. It really was supposed to be a closed meeting at the Urban League of Minneapolis. We do have still have an Urban League here. Ms. Cotton and a woman by the name of Nicole's last name is, were introduced as the movers and shakers of this new GVI group. But last November, Steve, in our beloved city, our mayor announced that he was creating an office dealing with violence, if you will. I mean, that was a special office that Ms. Cotton was going to be the head person. That's the same Ms. Cotton that told a member of the mayor, I mean, and we have what's called a strong council, a weak mayor form of government, but the mayor does get a chance to present a budget, as he attempted to do a couple of days ago before he was shouted down, and they had to call massive security to clear the council chamber. But anyway, back over to that. Ms. Cotton and her newly created office were awarded $1.1 million from the police department budget. We asked the question, what happened to the Bloomberg money? What happened to the money from the Department of Human Services and Health of the federal government that was going to deal with all of the psychological problems and et cetera we were having, because in 2016, 2017, and early part of 2018, the theory and the direction was is that, you know, these young gunmen and et cetera were just, you know, mentally unbalanced. But your question to Ms. Cotton, about Ms. Cotton, yes, she has been in play, starting with the Department of Health, doing experiments on young Negroes since 2014. Mm-hmm. Yes, you obviously looked up her, her history.
Okay, yeah, because I did notice it said she was the youth violence prevention coordinator for the city since 2014. Now she has this new. Has there been any? What are the results of? I mean, is crime? Is there less crime now in Minneapolis? What kind of results are we seeing?
A couple times we have had shootings and gunplay. Every day since the 1st of January in our beloved city, have had on the average one person shot a night since the 1st of March. So we are, you know, America's new edition of Tombstone, Abilene, you know what I mean, and Wichita, and et cetera. Now, your question is interesting because that is really politically sensitive right now, Steve. Because there was a question that at a six-month interval that the newly powerful created office of violence, of, you know, stopping violence, curtailing violence, and et cetera, would make a preliminary report to the Minneapolis City Council and et cetera. Now, I understand that there will be a meeting on, the 26th of this month, just in a couple of days, in which I guess there will be a preliminary report. I haven't seen anything published. And my colleague, Mr. Allen, had said at the very top of this program that we've kind of been stunned by the news blackout. I hate to use that word. Maybe it should be whiteout of our newspaper, which has suddenly stopped reporting on all of the shootings, both homicides and otherwise, in throughout our entire city, with the heaviest concentration being in North Minneapolis. I mean, they're shooting and killing them now to two to three within a 48-hour period.
Well, I guess I had my other question would be, what are the solutions? I mean, with all the organizations there, the NAACP, Urban League, Office of Violence Prevention, and all, what are the solutions that they've come up with so far?
The Office of Violence Prevention have indicated it's premature at this hour to have a significant and factual, well, I shouldn't use the word factual, should I? A narrative, if you will, which will lead to a preliminary discussion. I think that the meeting that my associate, Mr. Allen, uncovered last night is one. There were two other meetings earlier in the week, if you will, the powerful, in fact, the same organization that got $2 million from the white Australian family as a part of the $20 million award to the family of Justine Resnick, if you will. The Minneapolis Foundation, which is under the auspices and administrative control of a former mayor here of the city of Minneapolis named R.T. Ryback, that they maintain Mr. Allen really touched on something, but in the case of the Minneapolis Foundation, they are a private foundation. We have a lot of closed meetings here where a lot of people are not invited. In fact, we actually, Ms. Cotton and some say representatives of the mayor's office have created enemies list. So there is an enemies list. In fact, the reason I asked the question of Mr. Wilson, I was kind of shocked when he indicated there were a couple of committees which he had not been invited. He says he's been here for 16 years. I think it may be a little less than that. I remember when he came to us from Chicago after Sherez Jones, a beautiful young sister, 16 years old, if I'm not mistaken, was killed in some crossfire a decade ago. Again, we have a lot of meetings, but there is an enemies list here in dealing with the city of Minneapolis, and there are individuals that are under no circumstances are to be even suggested as being invitees. Now, that's creating some problems because we have a situation now where many of our black ministers, I'm talking about real black ministers with congregations of 400, 500, 600, 700, 800, are not being invited, Steve. And so Mr. Allen and myself, particularly Mr. Allen, who likes to, kind of play with the computer and et cetera, we've been asking that question and blog questions and et cetera. But what we're hearing right now with this level of violence is that any inquiry and examination, two key words, inquiry, examination, that some people bring forward are not to be entertained because there is a review going on. So I imagine that maybe by the 1st of January 2020, big election year, a lot of politicians in Minnesota will be standing for office. I assume that we will have preliminary documents. But I'm told by other sources that that's not a guarantee. And first of all, it has to be reviewed by the right kind of people.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. Well.
But no one talks about the enemies list. There is clearly a list.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that in the case of the gentleman that was with us at the top of the hour, Mr. Wilson, that he has apparently been identified as one who is a member of the enemies list, if you will. In fact, I am told by some sources that the woman who raised the question to Ms. Sasha Cotton about the shootings in a center later was identified as now a new member of the enemy's list, even though she had just been appointed by the mayor and the chief and them to be on this special committee that was going to deal with violence. Now, I'll say this to you. I don't know what the situation is in some of the cities that your organization works out of, Tulsa, if you will, St. Louis, Kansas City, Omaha. But here, we understand that there's a pecking order. I mean, I don't know that I accept it. I can't speak for my associate, Ms. Dallin. I doubt if he would accept it. But, you know, that there's a list, and there are certain people that are not respected or allowed to raise questions of inquiry. But again, we spent a lot of money, man. A lot of money. We have people doing a lot of traveling and going to big meetings and talking in terms of how well things are going in the Twin Cities. Man, we are in a state of emergency, Steve. State of emergency.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, I did have one last question. It's kind of more of a kind of a local and national question. What's the relationship between your mayor and Representative Omar at the moment? Is there any strained relation there at all, or what's going on?
Yes, it is, and in fact, I'm aware. I have not had a chance to formally share it with my co-host, Mr. Allen. There was a serious fallout from the interference by our president, the Honorable Donald James Trump, when he convinced the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, to deny entrance by two United States congresswomen, both women of color, one from Minnesota, one from Michigan. At the mayor's and your staff people had indicated that they may ask that question. When the mayor was getting ready to give his budget speech, which was a big political thing for him, a large delegation, including Representative Omar, appeared in the council. And we have a big council, you know. Our city government is in a very old building, but it's considered to be, you know, the best of its kind as it became built about 1885-87. But anyway, people were kind of shocked when this delegation came in. Representative Omar sat surrounded by supporters, security, and et cetera. When the mayor of the city, who is Jewish, began to try to give his budget message, people took to the floor and began to scream and holler. I know, like, one of the individuals was an African-American activist named John Thompson that's out of St. Paul, has been quite a voice over here. There were some Native Americans. There were white radicals and et cetera. And they actually drove the mayor from the council chambers. In the meanwhile, though, they cut off the sound because we had a couple of Negro leaders that attempted to stand up and say that the mayor should not be disrespected, and the crowd shouted this individual down. Bottom line was the media decided to suppress the information. Is that the issue had come up that the Jewish mayor of Minneapolis had been asked to take a position with regards to the interference of the right of the two congresswomen to travel to Israel. In fact, one of them, as I think your people know, has a grandmother who's in her 90s that is a resident of the Palestinian-occupied territory. And there's great anger. The paper and the white media, visual and otherwise, are going to great lengths. I don't know what specifically, if anything, is in this morning's paper, but the decision has been made by senior editors at the Minneapolis Star Tribune and all four of the major network stations that they want to stay away from the rift between supporters of the Jewish mayor and, quote-unquote, the Muslim congresswoman for the 5th Congressional District. In other words, sir, their relationship is not very good at this particular hour. The mayor has been accused of supporting racism, anti-Islam, anti-Muslim, and et cetera. I don't know if it can be patched up or not, if you will, but again, that's for the powerful leaders of our city and the African-American community. But they haven't said anything. After the announcement was made 2 days ago that the president had told the Israeli prime minister, don't invite them, you know, in fact, I understand he even used a derogatory term that starts with B.
Oh.
And, of course, the Israeli government complied immediately. Then they played a little game and told the congresswoman from Michigan, TV, that she could come and see her mama, grandmama, as it pertains to humanitarian, but she could not speak on anything pertaining to relationships between the United States and Israel. And, of course, she had to make a decision. And then, if you have been following it, the interior minister for Israel said, and it was very biting. I thought it was very mean-spirited, and I would have liked to have thought, even though it was being directed towards the congresswoman from Michigan, made a heck of a statement, well calculated, if you will, that obviously Tayyip had clearly shown that it was more important to hate Israel than to go see her beloved grandmother. So that festering here also in the Twin Cities. And it was one of the reasons that there was such an uproar. And then there were people who were raising questions about law enforcement, the brutality, and et cetera. We have another situation, as I speak, sir, in which it is now being alleged that the Minneapolis police, this cannot be confirmed officially, but the Minneapolis police last Saturday on 39th and Columbus, if I'm not mistaken, that's in the area close to where our caller, Mr. Wilson, that police severely beat a African-American woman and her brother, if you will, threw them in jail, and et cetera. I understand that Michelle Gross, who has called in Don to this program a number of times, is leading the move and has obtained legal counsel for the African-American woman and her brother, if you will, but people are tying that into the fact that the Jewish mayor of Minneapolis really doesn't care about people of color. And so I appreciate the fact that you have to ask that question because we are not supposed to talk about it. I mean, you know, they can't do anything to Don and Ron, but you kind of get those subtle messages, those text messages, and et cetera, you know, try to be wise to leave that alone, blah, 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 blah. But it adds, unfortunately, fuel, kerosene, gasoline, to the race relations in our city.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's amazing. That's amazing what's going on up there.
Yeah.
If I can interject real quick, this is really funny because this was published in the Star Tribune last night, and it kind of gave me a chuckle. I'd like to share with both of you since you're on this topic.
Go right ahead.
The headline, cultural districts, Minneapolis hopes to turn diverse communities into destination. It says Mayor Jacob Frey and some council members are calling for an infusion of city spending to clean up litter, improve lighting, and spruce up building facades. So he basically, to me, wants to make, and yeah, there's a picture of the background of Cedar Square West, which you know, Mr. Edwards, from being here. That used to be a college kind of mini city over there, dinky town in the 60s, 70s. You go drive through there, and actually it was built in the 70s, excuse me, but that was mostly University of Minnesota, Augsburg, and Concordia, college students that filled those towers. And now it is a 100% Somali, for lack of a better word, my national area. The stores have changed. But anyway, there's a picture of the Star Tribune online looking at the Cedar Riverside neighborhood of Minneapolis. It's one of six proposed cultural districts where, you know, he wants people to come here and look. And, you know, like a zoo, I was thinking. you know. So.
I've heard the same thing. By the way, again, coordinating, and this is what the Ron and Don program, and we appreciate the call once again from Steve in the Midwest. The timing couldn't be worse because BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, for those that don't know, did a heck of a piece Thursday night on Portland, Oregon, which is considered to be the whitest metropolitan city in the United States. I mean, it's really white there. The black population is 6.2%, and a lot of that black population are black Africans who were brought by the Lutheran Church. Lutherans are big in Portland, just like they are here. But anyways, Antifa and others have said that this is their turf, and the white boys are coming out of the mountains, my brother, of Washington, Idaho, and Oregon, and these cats don't play. And they said it's time for Sambo to leave, kind of thing. I mean, you know. So BBC did a two-part series, and they talked in turn because there's an event getting ready to take place. It may be today, in which the two factions who are extremely violent, Antifa on one hand, the white nationalists on the other, and that there could be casualties in the street. Now, interesting enough, the chief of police, a very lovely sister named Danielle Outlaw, she is the chief in chief for 2 years, came there from Oakland, California. But it was interesting, this special piece that BBC did about the rising tide of white nationalism in America. So everybody trying to stay away from everything. And the rest assured that we have strong white nationalism here. And I go back to the story that we kind of broke way back in the winter when the brother was beaten to death by a white mob right there just up the block from the old Rudolphs. Remember that? Remember that story, Ms. Talbot? We broke that here. That African American, the coroner, you can always depend on the coroner to rule the wrong way, said that it appeared he died from a heart attack. Man was 42 years old. But there were witnesses that saw him being beat by white nationalists in that backyard, right there off of Hennepin. And 23rd or 24th. So things are happening all over the place. Warnings are going out from Billy Bob and his group, primarily coming from their communications center in our Sandpoint, Idaho, if you will. And they have another lovely communications center in a place called Mars Hill, North Carolina, where Dylan Root, you remember Dylan Root killed all the black people in the church. They don't even talk about that no more. Where he was trying to get away to. So anyways, there's a lot of volatility going on. And I don't know, Don, I just don't know if people can handle it.
Yeah, I agree, Mr. Edwards, I agree.
Yeah. But again, those two enclaves of white extremist communication, I mean, they're doing some excellent job getting their message out. Is Sandpoint, Idaho. I know you're looking at it on your TV, if you will, and Mars Hill, North Carolina. And that's there in the kind of the so-called panhandle of North Carolina and the panhandle of Idaho. So anyways, you know, we may put a part on that. At one point, I was thinking in terms of maybe taking a production team out there, but sources have told me that probably would not be a very good idea because Negroes have disappeared in those two Pacific areas. But again, we're not supposed to talk about it, Doc. And particularly brothers coming from Chicago, coming through Minneapolis, going through the Dakotas, Montana, and then taking that swing through that little thin part of Idaho have disappeared. And this has been going on for 20 years. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to do another caller.
No, I was just going to say, I'm going to have to listen off the air to you. So thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You, sir.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. folks to add that
caller,
thing.
Go ahead. Yeah, caller, you're live on the air.
Hello, Don Allen?
This is the Ron and Don
hello?
Show, yes. Yes, hello. This is the Ron and Don
Ray
Show. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
Oh,
how are you? And honors and kudos out to my Mr. Ron Edwards.
How are you doing? I can't quite hear her well as I could others, Don. Who is this that's calling us?
This is
Barb
Davis White.
Miss White, my good friend, calling to us from Central Asia. How are you doing, dear? How's it going? What's your question for?
I'm calling in from northern Iraq, and I just want to say how moved I am that you two are still fighting the good fight of faith there in Minnesota.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yes. Some people say that we're just toxic and running our mouths, but see, you're in a part of the world that really knows what's going on, Miss White, and I think maybe you could put some fat on some of these fools and say, this is a dangerous planet that we live on right now. But go ahead. What were your questions or said?
Well, I'm just wanting to comment on your comment. When I'm tuned in from the very beginning of this show, and Mr. Edwards, you said the word that is, I think, the most important word that is spoken today, and that's called accountability. And if the feet of these leaders, so-called leaders and money people, are not held to the fire, you're going to just have the same old circular firing squad. What has happened in Minnesota, you don't need white nationalists because we're killing ourselves.
Wow. Hear.
We don't need white nationalists. We don't need people to come in and be Antifa or anti-Antifa because we have not educated our children. Our fathers are absent. We took the welfare money. We took that, someone said to me in New York one day, they said, we traded in our men for welfare cheese.
Mm. Go ahead and continue on. I mean, we're just sitting
I just want to talk to you from Iraq. I live where we defeated ISIS. We defeated ISIS not with nonprofits and not with non-governmental organizations. We defeated ISIS by saying to them, you are not going to take your theology and your ideology and you're not going to ram it down our throats. And what's happened in Minnesota, starting with Mr. Ellison and the rest of his little conforming nightmare people that they've been running America. I'm a Minnesotan. I was born and raised in the 5th District. I grew up in
West
Minneapolis. Yes. You know that, Mr. Edwards.
Yes, you do. Yes,
and
you
I've
did.
Watched
yes,
it
yes.
go down the hill for money, just for money. Just for money. These people get paid very little to be whores for the system. And our children are dying.
Yeah.
And the theology of Minnesota is, it's non-governmental theology. We'll take care of you. We will pay you. And I want to bottom line it by saying they don't need us anymore, Mr. Edwards. They don't need us because they've got enough votes from the Somali community. They have enough votes from illegals and everyone else who gets paid under the table to bring in leadership that doesn't give a damn about black young men. Black young men are the future, and our future is dying.
Yes, ma'am. Hear. Again, hear. Yes.
Don
anything
Allen
else, Ms. White?
I'm not done yet. I'm just warming up, honey. Don Allen was my chair. He was my chair for my congressional run against Mr. Ellison. And he knew we could not get the statistics even, the murder statistics. We couldn't even get a hold of the crime statistics, which by rights should have been handed to us so that we had something to fight for on our platform. We couldn't even touch him. Am I right, Mr. Allen?
You are absolutely correct, Ms. White.
They wouldn't let us touch the statistics. And so we didn't have anything to base our goals or objectives on. And the game that's been played, and I'll tell you something about the congresswoman that they have put in office, who married her brother, by the way, and it's a Hennepin County statistic. She came against Israel. The first thing she did was come against Israel when she got in office. And the first thing she should have addressed is our black young men, Somali, black, Asian, all of our men of color, that should have been addressed, not Israel and what Israel's doing. She has nothing to do with Israel. And if she were in Somalia, which I've been to Somalia, I've been to Puntland, to Garoway, and I helped with the curriculum for the education. If she were in Somalia, she wouldn't be opening her mouth like this. I'm telling you now.
I know. You're absolutely correct.
Why doesn't she address what's happening in Minneapolis right now?
You're absolutely correct, and this is one of the questions that came up when she announced that she was going to run for the fifth congressional seat after mysteriously, our current state's attorney, or in this case, the attorney general, decided that he, after 12 years, no longer had a place in the Black Caucus, and basically many of the sisters in the Black Caucus thought it would be best for him to move on. And we talked about that infinitum on these programs back during that hectic day. It is refreshing, my sister, to hear an individual, particularly a black woman, talk in terms of the path to extinction of our black males. And then by extension of that extinction, the end of the African-American race. It's refreshing to have somebody step up and say it, because, boy, we don't talk about it. Well, you know, they don't talk about it here in Minnesota. But go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Thank you. I want to say this. I raised a black male, and I raised him to understand the law. I raised him to understand if you buy a house, if you are standing on your lawn, the police stop you. You tell them you are on your property, and if you haven't done anything wrong, if you haven't done anything to suggest they write a warrant out for your arrest or anything else, you don't even talk to them. You don't even address them because they work for you. You don't work for them. I raised a black male, so I know good and well what black men face in our society. When I got to Kurdistan, when I got to northern Iraq, the first thing I did for males was open a school. I own a school here. And the education is the bottom line here. It's education. If you educate children, which I helped do in Somalia, they won't join ISIS. They won't join gangs. They won't join people who want to see them stripped of power and stripped of intelligence and a bullet waiting for them. They actually need to know they are valued. And I said that, Donnie, when we were when I listened to the other show that you did the other day. We need to make these kids understand they're valued. They have a purpose. Every one of them that were pooped out of a beautiful mother, they have a purpose. They have a purpose, and we need to get back to basics with these children.
All right. Don, do you have any questions? What program was that Don was on? I bet he was on with Tom Bernardi. Were you on with Tom Bernardi, Don?
West Smooth, you know, the jazz, Twin Cities Radio Network. We're sitting out in the car.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Brett Buckner was there. Brett Buckner. I never thought, Mr. Edwards, I'd see today that Brett Buckner agreed with everything I said. But, yeah, it was a little interesting.
I had just seen Brett Buckner a week and a half before because I had a chance to visit the Minnesota Museum, which is, you know, actually already gone out of business. I saw some pictures there, and I ran into Brett Buckner. I hadn't seen Brett Buckner in about 10 years. Good. That's interesting. Anything else, Ms. White?
Thank you so much for taking my call. Thank you very much. I love you.
Thank you for your wisdom.
Thank you. All right, we're back. We have about 11 minutes left of the show, Mr. Edwards. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904.
By the way, we want to thank Ms. White because her call had to come through what is called satellite radio, our satellite phone. And I'm deeply appreciated. Every once in a while, we're able, the NSA, lets one of those calls get through. We're not supposed to know that either, but I know everything that the NSA has been doing. They monitor us. But do we have any other calls, Don? Let's
No, we don't, Ms. Edwards, but we have about 10 minutes left of the show, and I did want to get this question out and ask you because I know that you have the majority of the answers. It's back when they created Northside Achievement Zone, they mapped out partner schools and a zone or area where they would put this or infuse or work a mission with this first $35 million that they received in the community to help. You know, something, I mean, I guess I got to see it before I can call it something. But North High was, it seemed to me, I alleged that it was strategically removed from that particular Northside Achievement Zone. What happened with that, Mr. Edwards?
Well,
how did
you're
that
correct,
happen?
Your preliminary analysis is correct. What did happen was that you remember that people thought that North High was going to close. Remember that? And they were so sure that the community was not going to stand and fight for their school, which was, by the way, at that particular time, as it technically still is, was a very modern and new building. And so the long-range planners for the city of Minneapolis had already brokered and bet on the fact that the colored school, the Negro school, as they like to say it, would not be in existence. And so, you know, these plans that these folks have are plans of 5, 10, and 20 years, right? Remember, we've talked about that before. And so what basically happened was they had already determined that North High School was through. And the community saved North High School. It is operational, if you will. There's a great pride and et cetera. And so I guess they just haven't gotten around to it again. But you got to keep that in mind because at the time that all of these grand plans, 25, 30-year plans, that's what Thor Construction was going to be a part of, don't you remember? A part of the new Capitol World Headquarters and all that BS. And Copeland and them were getting big money in anticipation of that. They had made their contracts and arrangements with Target. They were building at least an average, or helping to build at least an average, of allegedly on paper, of 4 or 5 targets around the country. And so there was this discussion where, you know, if we get around to it again, I will bring out of the safety box, if you will, some of going back to 1999, 2000, 2001. The plan, which talked in terms that the major high school would be Patrick Henry, which is on the far, far north end, or that they could send Negroes across the river to Edison. North High School was not needed, which was ridiculous given the physical location of North High School. But to your question, Mr. Allen, that's what happened. There's documentation in the office of the city planner. That shows that what was going to be a new regentrified area. And by the way, the gentrification, as you know, Don, we've talked about this in the production meeting, the gentrification has kind of slowed down. And my understanding is that some of the realtors, investors, and et cetera, are kind of wondering why there are still Negroes in significant parts of North Minneapolis. I mean, you know. In fact, one of the people that has been in the lead, her name was mentioned earlier in this program, has been in the lead of undermining situations, creating circumstances of fear and et cetera in the African-American community, is the woman identified as Julie Learson. Very interesting operative. Notice I use that word operative, if you will. But, hey, the plan is in place. Our leaders have stood by silently, if you will, picking up, as Ms. White said, a crumb here, a crumb there, and et cetera. And you see the predicament that the African-American community is in right now as we speak. And it, as I said, it did not help to anybody to have this dispute, this split between the Muslim congresswoman and the Jewish mayor. So If you got another call there, Holden, let them come on in. Ask the question. We've still got, we got time, about 5 minutes.
Oh, we have 5 minutes left in the show. No calls holding, but the phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. If you want to call in and ask a question in the last few minutes of this special 90-minute program. But go ahead, Ms. Edwards.
No. We, that's for anybody that wants to authenticate, to go down to the city planner's office and then go back in the back room. Back there, they got the big books and et cetera with the different plans. By the way, our new prison in North Minneapolis is doing well. A lot of reconstruction going on up there to make it, more secure for those that go up Fremont to and go by the former nursing home there, if you will, to take a look over. You see a lot of whites working. Employed, if you will, gainfully employed, and et cetera. Unfortunately, I can't say the same thing for the sons and daughters of the African. But our penitentiary, new prison up there, is flourishing, if you will. Primarily white, persons who are on parole, probation, and whatever. See, that's one of the key features, Don. We've talked about that before. Of formerly Thor, because Thor doesn't exist anymore. Wow. That the prime tenant, really, and I went there for a visit quietly, unannounced, with an associate 2 weeks ago. And man, that's a heck of operation up there. You got the probation office and et cetera. North Point, by the way, has moved its administrative offices into I don't know what they're going to rename that building. I don't think they could continue to call it for a world headquarters because there is no for world headquarters. But they have that. It was supposed to be a cafe. African American went bankrupt trying to get it done. City came in and said he didn't have enough bathrooms. I mean, really, Don, I'm telling you the truth. I'm not making jest. He came in and told the black proprietor, who was, already spent his money and was setting it up, that he only had one bathroom and that wasn't enough. And then the realtors, who are Target Corporation and et cetera, said, there's not enough space for you to build a second bathroom. See, that's, again, another one of those stories that you ain't supposed to hear. you will.
I said absolutely. But to what, when Barb called us earlier and what you've been talking about and what Steve was talking about, and KG, it's really funny that, Barb said something that was really on point for me, that, the education is the best thing. Because I'm just scanning the newspaper, and I don't know if you've seen this yet, Mr. Edwards, but it was published today at 9:15 a.m., 15 minutes before we went on the air. I guess it was a rap battle, and one of the young men stabbed the other one. It happened a while ago, but this guy was convicted this week. During a rap battle, we have our youth, trying to compete and running our vocabulary and killing each other.
Right. By the way, moving with current news, and when you said that there was a serious confrontation earlier in the week in Northeast Minneapolis. By the way, we've had a couple homicides over there too, including one three nights ago. But there was a major confrontation involving at least 11 young Negroes, apparently armed, pretty well armed, and police. And they had to call for additional backup. They had to bring in highway patrol. They even brought some backup from like Columbia Heights and et cetera. In other words, at the back door of Minneapolis. That's just how hostile and dangerous situations are. But anyways, that's James Brown bringing us on home, brother. This is the Don and Ron program. Take us on in, Don.
All right.
Yeah, we get what we deserve. We've been built, and we've been gone. We've been treated bad, talked about, as you and you moan. Just as you, as it takes you eyes to make.